As kids grow, so do the pains of parenthood. Patterns of miscommunication and resentment can cause damage over the years, leaving parents and adult children with fractured relationships. Confused, hurt, and sometimes angry, moms and dads can struggle to know where to turn for help and where to look for hope. My guest today is Gay Clark, and she answers several questions about how we should handle the difficult dynamic of having a relationship with your adult children. She offers advice and encouragement for parents wrestling with questions like, what do I do if my daughter is making unwise decisions? Or how do I navigate the transition of my son getting married? She also addresses even more difficult topics like, what do I do if my child says they've left the faith? Gay also offers advice to young adults who desire to honor their parents and yet grow into the independence and freedom of adulthood. Gay is a registered nurse who has worked with young adults for more than 20 years. She's also the author of Loving Your Adult Children, The Heartache of Parenting and the Hope of the Gospel from Crossway. Let's get started. Well, Gay, thank you so much for joining us today on the Crossway podcast.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you today. And I think it's great to address an issue that feels like it's universally irrelevant. All of us are growing up and we're all going to become adults if we're not already adults. And then if the Lord gives us children, we're all going to experience that same process again with our own children as they grow older and then eventually become adults. And I think parents wrestle with a lot of complex emotions when they see their children getting older, especially as they enter into adulthood and move out from under their roofs, get their own careers going, start their own families. That's such a huge transition that neither party has probably experienced before. And so although it's really exciting and rewarding, I think it can also be very difficult in many ways. So I wondered, to start us off, if you could just share a little bit about your own family's story and your own journey through those transitions, and if you can relate to the feeling that sometimes it can feel a little complicated and challenging at times.
Absolutely. What parent can't? When my daughter was approaching her 18th birthday, she came to me in the kitchen. I still remember where I was when she said, "Mom, for my 18th birthday," but I can't tell you the rest of the sentence. It has something to do with what she would like to do for her 18th birthday. But I was having heart palpitations because my daughter was turning 18. I knew that intellectually, but somehow her coming up and asking me this question that I only heard half of struck a chord of reality to me, that my daughter is now on her way to adulthood, and I am not ready for that. And I think many parents feel that way. It's a little different than sending your kindergartner off and you're lamenting that window of opportunity of having him home full time is gone. When your child is growing to be an adult and you say, "I'm not ready for that," they're going out the door and they're not coming back home when the bell rings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My wife and I are parents of young kids. And so we're kind of in those early stages right now. And I feel like we often hear this advice from older parents just to cherish these years, to really not take for granted the time that we have, because the time does go so fast. But I still wonder if there's something to just needing to experience it, that even if we've heard that before, it's still going to feel like the time flew by and that our kids are growing faster than we ever could have expected. Is that true?
It's absolutely true. I'm not what you would consider a sentimental person. I'm not the person that got overly emotional when my kids went to school and different things like that. But yet, when they go through the different little milestones, you have a moment of warning, if you will, that the volcano is about to erupt and you are not going to be ready. So you get the sparks when your child hits the kindergarten door, sparks again when they graduate from high school, on and on it goes. You get these little warning signals that you're not prepared for, that you're on some kind of train that is going at a lightning speed that you have very little control over, that you can't slow down or stop. You can't make time stop. It's very challenging.
Yeah,
in that regard.
For me, nothing in life has had quite the same effect on helping me understand how quick our lives are, how short our lives are, and even our need to hope for something beyond this life, than seeing my kids get older and just feeling that the even the sadness of the passing of time and the change that I know we can never go back. It's an interesting experience to even get a broader perspective on our lives and the shortness of our lives through our kids.
Yes, I remember I worked for a cardiologist who came in the door one day. Your comment made me think of it. And he just, his face was downcast, as we like to say. And I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "She said ketchup today." And her little, he had a little girl that looked like a little doll. And she, for years, always pronounced ketchup tetsup. But when that door opened that she said ketchup, he was not ready for it. And I said, "This is the first of many heartaches, big guy." And that little girl is now a young woman with kids of her own. So,
Yeah, it flies. Well, in preparation for this interview, Gate, we invited listeners to submit questions related to parenting adult children. And I have to say, the response that we got to that call for questions was really amazing. We received nearly 400 questions from parents all around the world, from places like Cairo to South Africa, the UK to Hong Kong, and all throughout the US. And so obviously we don't have enough time to go through all of those questions right now, even though I wish we could. But we here at Crossway were struck not just by how big the response was, but by how personal and poignant some of the questions that we received were. But my guess is that that's not a big surprise to you. Is that right?
Not a big surprise at all. There is no pain quite like a parent pain. And that can be in a myriad of ways, whether it be seeing our children suffer or their anger lashed out on us, any number of things. But when you're a hurting parent, you are truly, truly hurting.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about some of questions that are definitely in that category, questions related to the pain of parenting adult children and what that looks like. But maybe to start us off, one listener in Texas asks, when should we stop acting like parents with our kids and start treating them more like adults, as even friends? How would you begin to answer that question?
I would say it's not a point in time exactly, but it's a process. You didn't really notice how you changed gears when you were parenting a one-year-old and they turned into a three-year-old and then a five-year-old and then a 15-year-old. But you are constantly changing how you parent your child as they grow older. And somewhere along the line in the high school years, you will be mentoring every bit as much as you are parenting. What does that look like? That looks like your children are picking up on one of the more glaring things, unfortunately, is our hypocrisy. They're going to know if our faith matters, for example, because they see us on Monday morning and not just Sunday morning. So your mentoring, whether you are aware of it or not, when your kids are old enough to see what you're doing and compare it to what you're saying. And somewhere in those years, those high school years and college years, they are seeing more and learning more from what they see than what they're hearing. So you're making a little bit of a transition. And that's a transition that should happen. They should grow up. I mean, as Christian parents, our ultimate goal is that our kids let go of us and take hold of Christ. That's the best goal we could ever have for our kids. And in taking hold of Christ, they need us less. Imagine that. That's a that's a job well done, is they need us less.
Yeah.
And our job at that point is to let go of them and, again, take hold of Christ ourselves.
So help us understand as parents, though. We Christian parents would probably agree with that, would say, yes, that's right. They need Christ. Uh-huh. They don't need me. I don't want them to need me. Yes. And yet it can be so hard for us to let go.
Yeah.
So why is that? Why is it hard for us as parents to let go as our kids get older?
I think of the line, and you are too young to remember this cheesy movie that Disney made called The Happiest Millionaire. Don't Google it. Don't watch it.
Okay.
But there's a line in there. When a man has a daughter, he wants her life to be as smooth as satin ribbons that she wears. And cheesy, I promised you cheesy, but true. That's what we want. We want our children to be void of suffering and frustration. We want to iron out everything. We want to go ahead of them. You've heard of helicopter parents. There is this thing, I just learned it, called lawnmower parents.
Huh.
And they're going ahead of them with the lawnmower, mowing down the grass, lest one little blade touch their little shins. So we don't want to see our children suffer or be even discomforted. And yet we have to agree as believers, that's one of the primary vehicles God uses to refine us. Not that we want to see God bring it on, but nonetheless, sometimes we're getting in the way of the Lord by trying to make sure our child has a carefree, smooth life continually.
Well, and it seems like, too, at its worst, that can even be us trying to, you know, take the role of God himself. We're trying to sovereignly orchestrate every facet of our kids' lives, you know, ultimately for their good, we think, but that's, we just can't do that.
A good example of that would be when, if your child, this, I remember my daughter, she was, I want to say about 14, 15, confided in me that she'd really like to be a country music singer. And she had a pretty good voice. And my response to that was, okay, I don't know that you're that good, but let's get you a guitar and let you have some lessons. And so she started taking lessons that she struggled to stay with. And lo and behold, that dream died with the guitar. But I didn't laugh at her. I didn't tell her, no, you can't do that. I didn't fight her. I tried to promote her and let the experience of itself teach her a thing or two about herself. Later, I was surprised when she said, I want to be a teacher. But the more I thought about it, I thought every night she'd have all those little stuffed animals on the bed and she'd be going over things with them like it was a little classroom. How could I not have seen it? How could she not have seen it? But that's a good example of, I could have tried to play God and say, Nashville is a sinful city and you're not going to do that. But instead, let's see what it takes to be a country singer.
Well, that kind of relates then to a common question or a category of questions that we received a lot, a variety of listeners. One person in Australia wrote in, what should I do apart from praying when I see my adult child making what I consider to be a foolish decision? What advice would you offer to that parent?
I would say, first and foremost, I would challenge you to remove the phrase apart from praying, because it can begin to feel like an afterthought. I'm only praying. We don't pray for our kids enough. We don't pray like St. Augustine's mom, Monica, who mopped the floor with her tears day and night for years and years and years before he became a Christian classic. We don't do that. So prayer is not just the thing we can do, it's the essential thing we can do. The other thing we can do is be curious. Without giving our opinion out, we can say to our son or daughter, hey, tell me about this plan you have. Maybe your son wants to buy a house and you just know he can't afford it. Son, tell me about the house. How many bedrooms, bath, you know, and let him go on about that house. And then you could say something like, well, you know, it's been a while since I've done all that. That's a lot of paperwork and stuff. Is someone helping you with financing? What does that look like these days? Just be curious again and ask him, I don't even know how you figure out how much house you can afford. Again, you're giving him non-threatening ways to continue the conversation and keep that conversation going. And at some point, you might prayerfully say, would you like to know my thoughts on this? And if he says no, then you go back to your prayer closet, maybe bring a couple of your buddies with you. Because you've got parents that know what you're going through. Don't let them be ignorant. I know there's several, for a fact, because I'm on some of them, there are several great Facebook prayer groups for adult children if you don't feel like you have someone like that. But get on your knees after you've had those things. But the important thing is to give advice judiciously only after you've been given permission.
Yeah, I'm struck that it just, that really shows so much respect for your adult child. And yet it can be hard to, I would imagine, make that transition when you're coming out of the younger years where you don't have to ask for permission to give advice and to even give instruction. You just do that when you feel like you want to do it. To make that transition would be a whole mindset shift, it seems.
It is, but this is kind of a compromise. You know, there's a popular saying out there in dealing with your adult children, bite your tongue. Just hold your nose and bite your tongue. Keep your mouth shut. Your kids don't want that. They don't want that kind of parent. But they do want one that treats them with as an adult who has intelligence. And so by asking questions and being interested in what they're interested in and caring about what they care about and refraining from an opinion until they ask for one, you're doing something that's a far more balanced, and it gets more toward that goal of mentor friendship that you so desperately crave.
So we received a lot of questions as well from parents struggling with the reality of a child who has walked away from the Lord.
Which
has to be one of the most painful experiences a parent could face. One listener in Texas writes, "We raised our four daughters to love the Lord, but one by one, they have renounced their faith and left the church. And though I pray for them constantly, I find that I have little hope for their salvation. How do I navigate this pain and loss?"
First of all, I need to express how my sorrow with you in your children in their spiritual state. I can't imagine what that feels like. But I can also tell you that there are many, many moms and dads who do know what that feels like. You are not alone. There are a lot of folks that are in that situation, that are grieving daily, that are weeping daily. One of the first prayers I think you can pray with the Lord is, "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief." If you are at a point, and it's understandable, it's human and understandable that you would be at a point where you dare to doubt that that they can be saved. But there is no human being on the planet that when God sets his sights on them can escape the Holy Spirit. There is no one. And it may not be in your lifetime. That's the hard thing. You may not in your living years see that. They may hear the gospel in a fresh new way at your funeral and bow the knee to Christ. I know of a couple of children that that happened to. And I don't have scripture to prove it, but I have a sense that the Lord, in his mercy, since they're with the Lord, has let those parents know that their kids are with him too, spiritually. So I say, don't stop praying. You don't know God's time praying. The thief on the cross, moments before he died, made a monumental decision. And I imagine his mama had no hope for him. Are you kidding me? No hope for that guy. No hope. Had no idea that there was a transformational conversation happening moments before his death. We don't know all the ways that God is at work in our children's lives. Who's talking to them at work? Who may also be praying for their salvation? Who are they interacting with in all of their spheres of influence who you've not met, that God could be using? Pray that God raise up somebody at their job or some other place in addition to your voice. And finally, and I say this as carefully as I can, is there was a season where I think our group of believers stressed so fervently in the sovereignty of God and God's wrath on sin that we were a little light on the fact that God had grace to cover our sin and he loved us even while we were sinners. And your adult child, one of the things you can express to them, if there's any chance this is true in their lives, is that if I have reduced Christ to a list of rules of do's and don'ts and a place that you got to be from 11 to 12 on Sunday, if that's what you saw from my life, then please forgive me. Please forgive me. And I hope one day you can see the majesty and the glory and the mercy and the vast depth, height, breadth of Christ's love for you. There's an example in my book where I've kind of walked through what that looks like. Some few of us, that may be appropriate thing to do.
Yeah. Another person in Ohio asks, "I have two adult children who do not follow Jesus. What should I do when my son says he doesn't want me to contact him or have a relationship with him or his family anymore because of this disagreement over faith?" How would you respond in a situation like that?
Well, I, first of all, would grieve with them, and I would get someone to pray with me about your response. Somebody who knows you and that son. Perhaps you might respond with a letter because those are fairly non-threatening. They can be, as cruel as it sounds, go in the garbage, but he'll read it. Most kids will before they toss it, if for no other reason to critique it. But what should be in that letter? That's the big thing, right? What should you say? You should say something like this. If there's any reason, regardless of the exponential list of sins he has against you that he owes you an apology for, if there's any reason that you, that the Lord would bring to mind in your heart and mind where you have sinned against this child, bring it up, own it, and say that you are sorry that you did that. Whatever it is, the Lord will bring it to mind. Somebody might help you bring it to mind and say that you're sorry that your behavior and that your words have caused him pain, and that he no longer wants a relationship with you, that you will, with great grief, abide by his wishes, but let him know that that door is open 24/7 for him to come through. Let him know that you're willing to go to family therapy, the three of you or four of you, how many are involved, if that would be something he desires at some point. A lot of times when a child comes to an adult parent and says, I don't want anything to do with you, it can feel like forever. It's only in rare cases it's forever. That should be an encouragement. Take a deep breath. This feels like torment and forever, and it could go on for years, but in a lot of cases, it won't go on for years. What you do in the interim, again, is pray. If you have something you can ask forgiveness for, a letter would be okay. It depends on the circumstances about how much do you abide by your wishes. You've got the kid who might say, who might scorn you if you abide by their wishes with a C. He doesn't really care. And then you have the child who would be incensed if you dared to put another letter in the mailbox after that first one went out, or the second one. They would reiterate their quote-unquote boundary, and you would be working against progress and not for it.
Yeah. Such a hard situation to be in, but I know that parents do sometimes face that, and I think that's such helpful advice. So one of the most exciting, but maybe also sometimes most complicated and challenging things that a young adult or an adult can experience is getting married. And of course, we received a lot of questions about how parents of adult children should think about an adult child getting married and navigating those new relationships and boundaries. One listener from North Carolina writes, I desire to have a strong relationship with my future daughter-in-law and my son, and I want to encourage their marriage covenant. What can I do now before the wedding to build into that relationship?
Well, maybe you can learn from my mistake. And I do have my daughter-in-law's permission to share this. But when my son got engaged, he was dating a girl and living in Nashville. So he was 6 hours away from me, and I hadn't met her. So naturally, I'm curious, right? So that first meeting was very important. Meet the young woman at a stall. And I could tell, even though he hadn't proposed to her, I could tell by the tone in his face, all of it, this is the girl. So we meet, we have a weekend together, the three of us, and then they go off back to Nashville. And I got up the nerve a couple of days later, asked my son, how did that go? Not well. And I was a little taken aback. I thought at least he'd say okay, because I was a good girl and I took advice from my friends and I kept my mouth shut, which my friends will tell you it's very hard for me to do. So I kept my mouth shut all weekend. And that was not just hard. It was a miracle for me. So I said, well, where did I go wrong, Nathan? There's an example. Ask your kids. Don't assume. Don't get defensive. Ask. And he said, well, you didn't ask her any questions. She wasn't sure if you were interested in her at all. And this whole idea of asking questions, people say, where did you get that from? It's such a contrast to what's going on in our culture. I got it from Hannah. What a wonderful way to have a conversation. Be curious. Ask people questions. Get to know them. Be interested in that other person. We are all bent to be very self-focused. And now that she was 6 hours away, I thought, well, it's going to be a bit before I see her again to fix this. We didn't maintain it for very long, but we did start a brief letter writing campaign where I wrote her a letter and would ask her a question and she would reply with the answer and vice versa. So we got to know each other that way. So asking questions of your prospective in-law would be a good beginning. Just make sure they're non-threatening, like, so you're a Baptist. What's the problem with not being a Presbyterian? Wouldn't be a good way to begin. Make sure they're non-threatening questions, like what interested you to go into social work, for example. It's a question I asked my daughter-in-law, why social work? So she could tell me a little bit about that passion and such.
It strikes me that it's that advice is so, when you take a step back, it's so obvious and kind of, yeah, that's how we build relationships all the time. But for some reason, it seems like oftentimes it's different. It feels different when it comes to, you know, our adult children and then their significant others. It could feel like there's a different category there. What do you think is going on? Why do we think that way sometimes?
Well, again, I think there's a self-focus bent going on, a self-consciousness. And I also think there's an anxiety of this is a relationship, like you get to choose your spouse, but you don't get to choose your daughter and son-in-law, more or less. Your children do. And you want that relationship to be good. And so there's a lot riding on that relationship. So there's a lot of pressure and anxiety there. And then coupled with our natural sinful self-focus bent, the potential to mess that up is huge. It's just huge.
Yeah. So here's another really insightful question from a listener in Minnesota. Our young son and his wife are moving back to the area. How do we enjoy being close to them and being nearer to them, even geographically, but also know how to give them the space that they need as a family?
Well, my daughter lives 10 minutes from me. And in fact, she asked me to move to Tennessee. I was living in Augusta for many years. And when she became pregnant, she asked for me to consider moving to Nashville or to Chattanooga. And I wound up here in Chattanooga. And when we found the house that I'm now living in, it was 10 minutes from her house. And she saw that as a plus. And I asked her honestly, I said, is this too close? Because there's a lot of houses for sale. And she said, no, if we could find something closer, that'd be great. Now, honestly, something closer might be too close for me. But so 10 minutes. But even with that, even though that we're in the same town, even though she kind of knows my schedule, she doesn't show up unannounced for any length of period of time and expect to get undivided attention from me. She calls or texts and says, I'm on my way. Can we come over? I'm the same way. I might drop something off at their house, but if I haven't called first, I'm dropping it off and I'm not even knocking on the door because that's their sacred family time. They could have a lot of things going on. I'm not. And some people say that's silly, but it reminds me of the verses in scripture that talk about the big party and the person taking the seat in the front row and then having to be asked to move back. He says, you know, take the seat in the back row and have them say, friend, move up front. It's the same kind of principle. Be overzealous to protect your children's privacy. That's a way to invest in their marriage, for one thing. And then, or even if they're single, their privacy and their life apart from you is important to you to protect, as your life should be. Another thing, while we're talking about life, as adult parents, we ought to get a life. Now that our kids are grown and we're not daily responsible for their impending disasters, like running out in the street, you know, we're not keeping them from doing that, or we're not wiping vomit off of our clothes every day. We should get a life. We should be about the Lord's business. What are ways that we can serve the kingdom of God that we're free to do now that we haven't been prior to being 24/7 about our parents? That will enhance your relationship with your adult children in ways you can't imagine. It seems counterintuitive, but I love the look on my kid's face when I say, no, not that night. I've got plans. And they know I'm doing other things too. That helps their heart as much as anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe a couple final questions, Gay, this time from the perspective of the adult child. You know, we've been giving a lot of advice to parents, but
yes.
I wonder if you could speak to adult children right now who might be listening in. So someone from Oregon asks, what advice would you give to adult children regarding making these transitions from being under their parents' supervision and guardianship and instruction within a biblical home to then going out into the world and creating their own home, their own families? How should they navigate that transition and seek to continue to respect and honor their parents through that?
I think one of the biggest things you can do as the child is communicate your love to them, even as you're transitioning to your own space as a fully functioning adult. Particularly if you're married, you want to get with your spouse and say, what is this going to look like for us as a couple to be both loving to our parents, but independent of them? And come up with a plan of strategy, if you will, for what that looks like as a couple. And if you're single, what does that look like as a single person? I know I am grateful for clarity and feedback from my adult kids. And they say, we love it when you come over once a week. That's just the right amount of time for us. Or I've told them, hey, I am not going to be forthcoming with advice, but you know, I've got lots of opinions. So if you need my opinion, don't hesitate to ask. The flip side of that might be, Mom, I want you to know we do love you and we respect you. And since you raised me, there's a host of things I know what you would say. In fact, when I'm tackling a problem, I've thought, hey, what would my mom or dad say about this? If we don't come to you for advice, please don't see that as a lack of respect. Say something of that nature while you're giving their hand a big squeeze. Tell them respect comes in a lot of different ways. I hope we respect you by seeing you often, calling you often, interacting with you. Those are ways you can love and honor and respect. But be clear. Hey, Mom, we love you. We care for you. And we want to be ready to give you our undivided attention. So we'd appreciate it if you give us a call before you come over.
Maybe one final question then from the perspective of the adult child. And this would be some from somebody who maybe their parents aren't believers. Okay. Either they seemingly were at one point and have fallen away, or maybe they never were. And mm-hmm. What does it look like to honor your parents and respect them, but navigate maybe very different beliefs or priorities or values or opinions when it comes to spiritual things?
That is so hard. I know a number of kids that are walking through this now. And I think it comes down to, again, you can ask some questions and have conversations with them. But if you see the conversation getting tense, and it's no longer about content, it's about emotion, you are not moving the conversation forward. I know I came home like many college co-eds did. I came home burdened to share the gospel with my Southern Baptist parents, and I tore them apart. That did more damage to our relationship than anything I ever did. Whereas the things I have done without grumbling and caring for them in ways without words have spoken volumes to them. I know that you feel the burn to share the gospel with your parents when they're not saved, just as parents do with their kids when they're not saved. The parents have an advantage that they probably have shared the gospel at some point or time over and over again with their children growing up. Maybe adult children don't feel they had that same advantage. But the best way you can approach that is to demonstrate and ask the Lord to show you what this looks like for your context. How is loving Christ made me a better daughter to these parents in particular? They should see that God is from the inside out constantly transforming you into a new creature. And that should whittle down into just the little things. And as they see that, they're going to be curious. If the Lord is going to work in their hearts, they're going to be curious about your behavior.
Well, Gay, thank you so much for taking time today to talk through so many of these great questions that we receive from listeners. There's so much wisdom in what you shared and so much experience in what you shared. And we so appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt. I enjoyed being here.
That was Gay Clark on navigating relationships with your adult children. For more, be sure to check out her book called Loving Your Adult Children: The Heartache of Parenting and the Hope of the Gospel. Pick up a print copy of the book for 30% off, or get the ebook or audiobook for 50% off directly from Crossway by visiting crossway.org/plus. If you liked this interview, check out a conversation I had with Katie Ferris entitled The Unexpected Sorrows of Motherhood. Click the link in the show notes to hear Katie reflect on God's sustaining grace and comfort, even in the midst of the unique trials of raising children. For more audio content like this, subscribe to the Crossway Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. If you enjoyed this episode, consider sharing it with a friend and leaving us a review. Crossway is a not-for-profit Christian ministry that exists solely for the purpose of proclaiming the truth of God's Word through publishing gospel-centered content. Visit us today at crossway.org.